As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Magnificent Mortara, Masters, Marrakesh. Evans, Jev and Van Dorn keep their title push up. Porsche's hopes blown away in the dunes. And Sam's calendar update goes into overdrive. This is the Race Formula E podcast, Marrakesh edition. Hello, I'm Andrew Vanderberg, and joining me to look back at a thrilling Marrakesh GP is a sun-kissed Sam Smith and our special guest, Mercedes EQ team principal, Ian James. Ian, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Andrew. That was one hell of a tongue twister to start. I'm glad that was you rather than me saying that.
One take as well, just so long as everyone notices that.
Very impressive.
We've got a lot of off-track ground to cover at the end of the show, but let's start with the race from last Saturday. A great win by Edo Mortara, but more than that, just a great event in general with loads of overtaking, dicing, and of course, rough and tumble. Sam, what are we calling it? Vanakesh or Marrakuva? Whatever. They did a great job in getting Formula E Super Sub track ready for this event and got the rewards they deserved.
Yeah, I mean, the paddock consensus, which was me and the other journalist in the media centre, was Marrakuva. I think that sounded best. So let's stick with that. It's a decent super sub event, Marrakesh. I think there's been several good races in the past. And again, we got a really intriguing contest on last Saturday. I think the semi-permanent nature of it makes it an easier race to plug in and play to replace another event, but still, it was only 5 weeks they had to have a go at it, and they managed to pull it off. So fair play to the Formula E and the FIA in getting that together in 5 weeks. So it delivered a good race. I think it is the go-to sub race, so it all worked pretty well. What I like about it is that this race in particular, we didn't get that sort of shadow boxing element we've seen in previous races as much. So this train of slipstreaming and jockeying of the cars wasn't quite the same as previous events. And that was mainly because the high temperatures, which I think hovered around about the 33, 34 degree mark ambient and 50 degrees on track, meant that the drivers knew they had to make some hay early doors and use their hits of attack boost earlier than usual in the races to get the thermals, or not to get the thermals too toasty in the race towards the end of it. That all played a significant part, and at the end of the day, despite the debacle that was Vancouver, we went racing and we got another great race contributing to this really intense and intriguing season. So it was worth the 6 hour wait we had between the qualifying and the race, and it, you know, it didn't clash with the Grand Prix qualifying, which made a lot of sense. I think a lot of the drivers spent that time by the pool, I'm hearing. Some of them were living it up. So life's not too hard in Formula E when we go to Morocco.
So, Ian, a win for Mercedes powertrains, if not necessarily with the team that you would have liked. But what did you make of the weekend?
Yeah, all in all, very, very good indeed. I think that, as you say, Edo's performance was masterful. And congratulations once again to him and Venturi for setting up that win. It was very well deserved indeed. But going back to Sam's points, I think that of course, we were disappointed not to be racing in Vancouver. But once again, Formula E shown that it can be incredibly adaptable and react at very short notice. And I think to put the race on in Marrakesh was a great shout. Do we miss the fans? And when we've only got a short amount of time to pull it together, absolutely, there's no doubt about it. But at the same time, the racing was phenomenal, as it has been all season. So I think it was very much the right decision to go ahead with it. I actually really liked the track. The weather was great, although it gave us a couple of headaches in terms of temperature management. I understand that now it's up in the 40s and this weekend's going to be even hotter. So I think for that alone, we can be glad that it took place on the weekend that it did.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like you've dodged a little bit of a bullet there with that. I was worried when they were putting it on this time of year that it might just be that little bit too hot. Sam, as Ian said, I mean, just so much action going on at the front of the field there. But Mortara, he sort of had it in his pocket, didn't he?
Yeah, he when Edo gets everything together and the team do, which is getting increasingly frequent this season in particular, he has that air of the unbeatable about him. And quite apart from obviously the hardware, which is proven and probably the best and most efficient on the track, I think Edo, the way that he drives it, it was very noticeable in Berlin how he took a lot of the low speed corners. And speaking to a few other drivers, they're quite, you know, not in awe, that's too strong, but they are very appreciative of the way Edo drives Formula E cars, and especially rotating the car in the slow speed stuff. And I think he's got a never so slight advantage in that. But when, you know, when you put that sector by sector, it adds up and just makes the tiniest bit of difference, which, as we know, in Formula E makes, you know, can make all the difference when it comes to getting the win. I think, obviously, what benefited him in Saturday's race at Marrakesh was the fact that his two main challengers, let's call them the two Diesta Cheetah cars, had this another intricate choreography going on. We've seen it in the past. Sometimes it works for them, sometimes it doesn't. In this case, there was a difficulty, obviously, with Jev's thermals with his battery. He was suffering. He was effectively in the red on the temperatures. So that was very difficult to manage. But as ever, Diesta Cheetah, it never seems to be simple and straightforward, or rarely. So they didn't quite trip over themselves, but that choreography didn't quite pay off for them. This time it was the overheating, as I said. That was awkward. And it's an awkward place as well to try and swap where they did at turn seven. Da Costa made this point and said that there were, you know, much better places to try and do that sort of swapsy move. I think that was really significant in Marrakesh was that just the fact that gang of four, the title protagonists, Mortara, Vern, Van Dorn and Evans, only Da Costa was truly in the game in terms of either of their teammates. Now, De Vries and Degrassi weren't that far away, but they weren't capable of taking points off Evans, and Da Costa was. That's a subtle point, but it's the kind of thing that can make a really big difference come Seoul in August. A rejuvenated Da Costa, I think, is a powerful thing. And if that trait continues, it'll be a major boost for Vern, for sure. Going back to Mortara, you can't take anything away from him. He drove superbly. Absolutely, absolutely fantastic victory for he and Venturi. And now, you know, if there were any doubters as to their credentials for possible title winners this season, then, you know, I think there aren't many left. I think he's sort of driven a point across with that win. And he's matched Evans as a three-time winner this season. So the momentum has been picked up again by Venturi. And it's going to be super interesting to see how things go in New York, because Venturi and Mercedes had a very difficult New York last season. Very varying reasons why that was the case, but and I know that Ian, is it right in saying that last year, obviously it was your first time at New York City, but that isn't a major concern heading there this year, because you were so clear on why things happened last season, and there was obviously the extenuating circumstance with the different qualifying methods as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one. I was taking a look back at this earlier on. I'd actually coming away from the weekend in Marrakesh, I'd said to the team that initially, this feels almost symptomatic of this mid-season dip that we've seen over the last couple of seasons, to be fair. And I think, actually, on reflection, I was probably a bit harsh in that analysis. I think there's some clear differences between where we were at this point last season and where we're at now. As you mentioned, New York was pretty miserable for us last year. We came away from that weekend scoring no points whatsoever. Had also very difficult qualifying sessions, for some extenuating factors in that, in terms of weather and obviously the qualifying format that we had last season. But I think the key difference this year is that we're much more in control of other elements of the race weekend, and especially in terms of the race performance. So we saw this weekend, although we had the issues in qualifying, we were able to fight back through the race. I mean, Stoffel making up 11 places during the race itself, coming from 20th position to 8th, really in pure racing, that was phenomenal, and that was something we definitely weren't in a position to do last year. So that gives me cause for optimism going into New York in a week and a half's time, and let's see that if we can actually come back with some much better results. Although I have to say, obviously, we'll be looking to improve not only our race performance but our qualifying as well.
Ian, looking back to Marrakesh, Sam was talking about Dies Chicheta trying to implement those team orders. We saw in the Grand Prix on Sunday, Ferrari faced with a similar conundrum. How hard is it as a team principal to coordinate that? Because obviously you want your drivers to race, but equally it is a team game and is ultimately the team result that matters. So how do you actually get both competitive spirits of that are drivers to agree to this?
I think you can often overcomplicate the matter if you're not careful. At the end of the day, we've taken an approach that as long as it's mathematically possible for either driver to win the championship, then you've really got to question whether bringing team orders in that situation is the right thing to do. Now, I know that Antonio Felix da Costa said during the weekend that he himself was very much taking a look at the team situation and would help wherever possible, as much as that was going to be painful for him as an individual. Obviously, that then played out in the race itself. But as I say, you do have to be very careful that you don't trip over. And the more complexity you bring into the race, especially in Formula E, where you've got all those nuances happening constantly throughout the race, I think it's something you need to be very, very careful of indeed. Would I have done things differently in their situation? It's always easy with hindsight. I think, as we discussed before, maybe the positioning of the move wasn't ideal. There's a lot of other stuff going on in terms of challenges around whether you're going to derate from a temperature perspective or energy derates and so on and so forth. So that again just adds to the complexity. So I think at this stage we've still got, we went into Marrakesh with 44% of the season still to go. We've come away from Marrakesh, we've still got another 6 races, so it's all to play for, to be honest with you. The one thing that I would say though, and it goes back to the point that you made earlier, Dies Chicheta yet again are able to get themselves in a position where despite those challenges, they have both drivers scoring points now and potentially consistently going forward. And that makes them a very, very dangerous competitor from our perspective.
Yeah, Sam, that segues nicely into the next question, which is, that is 2 races in a row that DS haven't turned into a win. But does the sheer consistency of their performance outweigh that and actually make it a positive?
It's interesting because the DS E10's 21, when you look back at its history, it debuted, I think, in Rome last year, and Verne won a race in that doubleheader last April. But since then, the results have been, they haven't been stellar. They haven't been what you expect from that team that have won multiple championships. So it's been a difficult berth for that car. But the feeling is that even though they can only have minimal updates, albeit software, which is incredibly important and can make significant differences in Formula E, the actual structure of the car can't change. Their powertrain cluster is completely homologated. So they have found something, or they appear to have found something or honed something. And certainly in the last few races, they appear to be back to that, as Ian says, that very dangerous entity that can look at possibly challenging for 1-2 results, which we're so used to in the past. That didn't happen on Saturday, but it could easily, well, it could have happened. If Vern had not have had such a crippling derating effectively on his powertrain through the heat, then I think they would have been in a very, very strong position. Going forward, I think what Da Costa told me last week, that he would effectively ride shotgun with for Jev's title campaign, and he doesn't like doing it. He made it very clear that he doesn't like it and what driver does, but he realizes at the end of the day that, you know, he is employed by DS Techeeta, and he knows that it's for the greater good of the team. And the irony, of course, is that, you know, both, well, Antonio is strongly rumored to have signed for Porsche for next season, so he is leaving anyway. You know, the DAC is back is a nice little headline or a nice little snippet, but yeah, you know, I'd sort of hesitate in using that because I don't think he's really been away. I think any champion in Formula E who goes through a little bit of a dip is quite natural. We saw Vern do it last year. But I think in summary, I think DS Techeeta are a very dangerous proposition. I think they can certainly win another team's title this year. Whether or not Vern can win a hat-trick of titles, we'll have to wait and see. You know, as we alluded to in the last podcast with D'Ambrosio, there is a scenario, incredibly still, where Vern could win the title not winning a race. I think even if he won one race and won the title, it'd be a remarkable story, considering that Mortara and Evans have, you know, won at least three by the end of the season. So there's some great storylines to come, I think. And I just find it really interesting and, I think, entertaining for everybody in terms of having that consistent narrative that we have this gang of four at the front and they are delivering race in, race out. And I think the big question going to New York is which of their teammates can get into that group or into the fight, certainly to aid their teammates. Just reiterating what I said before, I see that as a real strong strand of the narrative for the next few races.
Ian, since Rome, when Evans got his sort of poor start to the season and turned around, he's seemingly driving really well. Obviously, as a team principal, you keep a close eye on how your rivals are performing. What have you made of the way he's turned his season about?
Yeah, massively frustrating, obviously, for us, it goes without saying. I think that, you know, we've spoken a lot already about Venturi and DS Techeeta, but Jaguar as a team, we definitely shouldn't write them off by any stretch of the imagination. I think they've got the bit between their teeth at the moment, and Mitch is very much leading the charge there. So his performance has been very, very good over the last few races. Again, annoyingly, he's a genuinely nice guy as well, which is, again, if he's in a competitor team, that just rankles a little bit. But no, I think he's... you know, put in a very strong performance, as you say, since Rome. I think Berlin, if I remember correctly, wasn't their race or their weekend necessarily, but we've seen that's been a bit of a bogey track for Jaguar anyway. Not quite sure why that is, but they've struggled there in the past. But we've seen in Marrakesh strong performances. I think we're now coming into races where there's a team and Mitch as well, I think, have performed before. He's in a position where he's lying, Sam, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think fourth in the Drivers' Championship.
That's right, yeah.
Currently, which is his highest ever finish that he's had in the past. And there's every opportunity for him to continue to you know, accrue points and either consolidate that position or better. So no, impressive all round, but we need to make sure that that our two, Stoffel and Nick, actually put themselves in a position and we put them in a position to take those points away from the other championship protagonists and keep them very much behind us.
Talking of the role of teammates, Sam, Lucas Degrassi was fifth in the second Venturi. He turns it on the race day, but he's being let down by his qualifying performances at the moment.
Yeah, it's a topic we cover every season to some extent, isn't it? And naturally, he doesn't like it.
All over again.
Yeah, and he won't like us talking about it again, and obviously not should he. You have to consider that apart from a few occasions when Daniel Abt got his head together at Audi with performances like in Berlin in 2018, I think it was, Lucas has never been consistently headed or beaten in Formula E, but he is beaten now by Mortara. I think that's fairly conclusive. Mortara is driving beautifully and he is beating Lucas pretty much all of the weekends we've had so far. We've speculated in an informed fashion that Degrassi was always going to be at Venturi just for one season. We believe that's always been the case, and he's on his move for next season. I think that's accurate, and I think news of that will be coming in the next month or so. Lucas is a savvy driver, we know that. He will know now that an element of his racecraft in the final six races will be for Mortara. And that, you know, we talked about that hurting Da Costa's competitive spirit. My goodness, you know, Degrassi's competitive spirit, I don't know what it's going to do to that. That won't sit well with him, but he's a professional and he is employed by Venturi and he is not in the title fight. So I think that's going to be a very interesting one to follow and see how Lucas can swallow that and possibly take some points off some of Mortara's competition for the title. I'm sure Ian has had similar conversations with De Vries. He alluded to it before, or will have to sometime during the season with the mathematics, if they're right, as Ian touched on. And ditto Jags with Bird. Unfortunately, Sam has hit a trough at the moment, just at the wrong time from Mitch Evans's perspective. And we know that DS, we've talked about DS and Da Costa about their position as well. I feel it will be a defining feature. I'm sorry to mention it again, but I just see this as a really defining feature for the last month of the championship, those fine margins. But going back to Degrassi, yeah, he actually drove a really good race, but he had to again because of qualifying. So he needs to find a bit extra in qualifying. He's not missing out on getting into the duels by much. You know, you're talking hundredths of a second, but that's what it's like this year. You know, if you can't just find those extra hundredths of a second, which the top four in the championship have consistently been able to find for qualifying, although ironically Stoffel had his issues with his brakes in Marrakesh and didn't make it into the duels. You have to find those to get in there, and Lucas will dig deep, but he's more than capable of doing it. You know, you write Degrassi off at your peril.
Just one thing on that. I mean, Andrew, just if I may come in, I mean, isn't it great though that we're talking about sort of a handful of drivers that are really genuine contenders for the championship this year? And for me, this is what the switch to the qualifying format's brought within Formula E. We've always said that we need to sort of have the best drivers and the best machinery coming to the fore. And I think that we're very much seeing that this season, and it hasn't detracted one bit from the show, quite the opposite. I think the racing's been all the more competitive for it. So I think we're really seeing the positives now coming through of that new format. And I think we're going to see some drivers that are going to cement themselves over the next few seasons as the top drivers within FE. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see that narrative continue to mature over the next years.
Oh, I completely agree. I really thought the old qualifying system was what was needed at the time, but it became clear that it really meant that following a competitive narrative through with the championship just wasn't possible. There were too many peaks and troughs and too many people who weren't in the championship fight running at the front of races, which is just a nightmare for broadcasters. But we've seen the competitive order among those top four drivers, top four teams is such that they just put on a great show. And If anything, now qualifying is augmenting that, because as Sam said, it's hundreds of thousands of difference, you know, making the duels or not, which is putting the onus right back on the drivers, which is exactly where it should be. So segueing off of that, Ian, a great comeback drive from Stoffel after those qualifying issues that Sam alluded to, combined with sixth place for Nick, is an okay result, but I imagine quite a long way below what your expectations were pre-weekend.
Yeah, as I said before, I think that we know that we're in a position at the moment where we've got two phenomenal drivers and a package that should be delivering strong points every weekend, and that's you know not in an arrogant way, but it's the pressure that we put on ourselves to make sure that we can deliver. And of course, if we don't, as we didn't this weekend, then that's massively disappointing for the team. But again, as I mentioned before, I think I take some comfort from the fact that if I compare that to last season, I feel that we are more in control. We know why we didn't perform this weekend. Firstly, with Nick, unfortunately having that issue where we hit him in FP1 meant that we lost a tyre, and that's crucial for the new qualifying format. When you do lose that tyre, then it really does put you on the back foot during the quali sessions. And then for Stoffel, we just had a bizarre situation with the brake material, whereby we left FP2 feeling very confident. We'd effectively managed the temperature split that we'd seen previously on the brake disc on the front, and then went into quali and it completely reversed. It flipped round and the car was undrivable. So put us on the back foot, but a stunning drive from Stoffel to get that eighth place. The important thing at this stage is that we are collecting points, even though they're not the points or not in the quantity that we'd hoped for and maybe expected. We now need to knuckle down and make sure that in New York, in London, and then in Seoul, we have better results. But it just goes to show again, currently within Formula E, you need to be getting every single last detail right and every element, because the competition is so, so tight. And those other three teams that we mentioned, so Jaguar, DS Tech Cheetah, and of course Venturi, are going to give each other and ourselves a run for our money all the way up until that last race. I remember thinking at the beginning of the season, wouldn't it be nice to sort of be in a position where you're going into those last couple of races knowing that you're in great shape for the championship. I don't think we're going to know who's going to come out on top, be it drivers or teams, until that very last race.
Oh, absolutely not. No, I can't see how those series of events would come in. That basically requires the other three of the teams dropping the ball, I would think.
No, absolutely.
Have you got to the bottom of what happened with that brake material then? Was it a manufacturing issue? Are you confident it won't happen again?
I think we're starting to understand it a little bit more. We've done a lot of work over the season. Obviously, you're limited in the sets of brake material that you receive to run through the season, and you work with what you've got. It's something that we've struggled with on a number of occasions, but thought, to be honest with you, that we were in reasonable shape at the beginning of the weekend, although we saw some temperature deltas on the front brakes from left to right. We felt by the end of FP2 that we were in good shape. So it just goes to show that there's still more work to be done there. But having had a chat with the engineers since getting back from Marrakesh, we've got a couple of ideas. So we'll not have the opportunity to try those out until we get to New York. So fingers crossed that we take a step forward there.
That's the great thing about Formula E, doing all your problem solving in public.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Sam, it was 7th place for Jake Dennis and 11th for Oliver Askew, following a career-best 7th place in qualifying, which was a reasonably decent result for Andretti.
Yeah, it was. They were back on form. I think, especially in the context of Dennis's start to the weekend, he lost the entire first practice session with a powertrain drama. So to put it seventh place in the race, he qualified fifth, is a very fine effort. He fought back hard. It was, again, mega in qualifying, got through to the quarterfinals, lost out to Jean-Éric Vergne. Dennis was ultimately, I suppose, the best of the rest, you'd say, outside the top four teams, Venturi, Merck and Jaguar and DS. So that's a decent run for them. The BMW has always been strong at Marrakesh. Remember when Da Costa and Sims were dominating, weren't they? And back in 2019, and then threw it all away. But they were comfortable 1-2 at that stage. It always seems to work around there. So, but not quite enough at this stage to penetrate through to the podium positions last Saturday. But yeah, great job by Dennis. He's ever impressive in his second season in Formula E. Oliver Askew, as he said, a great qualifying performance. Qualified seventh. Was a great effort by the Floridian. He's had some tough races in his rookie campaign. It's, I think, probably the hardest season to come in as a rookie. Last season we had Nick Cassidy, Jake Dennis, Norman Nato. All three of them, well, two of them did win races. Cassidy probably should have won a race, but he got a couple of pole positions. Some of that was partly because of the qualifying system back then. But I think coming in as a rookie this season, when everybody knows the hardware, most of them know the races or the races that have been used multiple times, I just think it's really tough. There's a hierarchical nature to Formula E now, and to come in as a rookie and make waves as others have done in previous seasons is super tough. Having said that, you've got the opportunity, you're going to make the most of it. And there's been a few races this year, I think Askew probably hasn't done that. I think in Jakarta, he kind of went missing a little bit in Jakarta when there wasn't that excuse of not knowing the track, because nobody knew the track. I think he and the team probably expected a bit more from there. Didn't happen. But yeah, fair play to him. It was a good performance. Sadly, he didn't get rewarded for it. He finished in 11th, slipped back to 11th. He had some real difficulties with the battery management, the thermal management in the closing stages, and sort of dropped back behind the Bird and Stoffel got pushed his way through as well. So shame he didn't get rewarded for it, because he probably did deserve at least a couple of points. But we'll see. I think we speculated, didn't we, in the last episode about whether he would get a second season with Andretti. It's still possible. We think Andre Lotterer is the favourite to partner Jake Dennis at the team next season. But you never know. I think in this silly season, there are plot twists on plot twists going on, which aren't generally known yet. I'm really looking forward to Seoul, actually, because I reckon after the week after Seoul, there's going to be about 72 driver announcements in 1 week. And I think trying to keep on top of that is one thing. Actually telling the story of what's been happening in the driver market is another. But I think we're going to come on to that a bit later as well. But So it's going to be fascinating to sort of tell some of those plot twists later on in the year.
Rattling off the final point scorers, Sam Bird in ninth, as is. Season of woe continues, and Oliver Rowland took the final point for Mahindra in 10th with how do you want to describe that performance, Sam?
A brawny cameo in the great style of Oliver Rowland. I mean, yeah, top entertainment. I'll tell you what it reminded me of. It harked back to some of those Robin Frines, I shouldn't be here, but I am, so deal with it races in season 2 with that old Gen 1 spec Andretti. Remember those?
Yeah.
That was fun. The Mahindra isn't an out-and-out bad car, but it's probably, what would you say, the seventh best overall technical package on the grid, sixth or seventh. So by rights, it shouldn't be anywhere near the sharp end. It shouldn't absolutely be nowhere near where Roland had it on Saturday. Yes, he had an aggressive strategy. Yes, there were gambles going on, but he's got to run his race. I mean, when you get someone to wring a car's neck like Roland does and get it into the top six, it's Herculean on occasions, and it's great entertainment. And although he was burning up some energy and it was a gamble, it was a remarkable charge, and he was up to second at one stage. I couldn't believe he was up to second place very briefly. It was just brash stuff from Roland and what we expect from him. It was good fun. He looked like he was enjoying himself. But at the same time, it's tremendously frustrating for those around him who are kind of forced to race him, knowing that, you know, he won't likely be in the fight for the big points at the end of the race. It was quite amusing afterwards. Formerly, we've got this room that the drivers go in directly from Parc Fermé, I think. And Roland, one of the first things Roland said was that, you know, he got a nosebleed during that race. We were so high up there into the top three. This was the race. Da Costa, he had a contact with Da Costa. Da Costa got shunted out of the way. But fair play to Roland for instantly realizing this and fairly giving him the position back. That was the right move from him. But this cost Da Costa a little more in energy and contributed probably to him not being able to attack Mortara more aggressively at the end. So, yeah, it's frustrating. These cork in the bottle races do still occur in 2022 Formula E racing. Often, they're great for the fans, great for viewers, great for us, but actually in the greatest context of the race, they're a massive pain in the arse for the guys who are fighting for the championship, and it kind of slightly discolours the picture of the race. But, you know, you can't blame Roland for giving it a go, and fair play to him. It was great fun while it lasted.
Ian, that's New York next up. We've talked about Mercedes' struggles there last year and also a little bit about how you'll be experimenting with those brakes solutions there. Do we expect to see more of the same with the same championship contenders at the front, or do you think there's the ability for somebody to spring a surprise and mix it up there with you guys?
Very good question. I mean, it goes back to that which Sam was just saying. This is Formula E, and despite the more consistent racing and results that we've seen over this season, it still throws up surprises left, right, and centre. So I'm not going to be brave enough to stick my head above the parapet and rule anything out at this stage. Having said that, my expectations are that I think you'll more than likely continue to see those that we've been discussing most throughout this podcast so far, back up there again. I think that all teams have got a good opportunity to, all the ones we've been discussing, have got a good opportunity to perform well in New York. As we've mentioned before, you know, we need to have a better weekend than we've had there in previous years. But no, I think it's whatever happens, it's going to prove to be a fantastic weekend. It's a great venue. It's one of my favourites, without a doubt, in terms of having the backdrop there in such an iconic city. So I'm very much looking forward to getting out there and seeing what we can do.
Now, after Marrakesh, Sam, there are a couple of teams that need a big result in New York. It looks like Envision's title charge is completely dried up. Nissan appeared to have got lost somewhere. They must have been in Canada for the amount of time I saw them on the TV. And what's gone on at Porsche?
Yeah, well, two of those three teams, Envision and Porsche, really just had dreadful weekends all around in Morocco. 0 points for those two teams is a disaster. But taking Porsche first was just a litany of issues and errors, which was their downfall. And it's now seen them plummet to 89 points off Venturi. There were issues, steering column, a sensor, contributed to Lotterer missing his little time he had to set in the first half of the qualifying group. And then there was this complex issue for Wöhrlein in the race with a battery error. There was a team error, basically, where they switched off for too long the battery before the race, and it reset itself to a different mode, meaning that they had derating in the first lap, which explained Wöhrlein's scattiness, let's call it, when Evans was trying to overtake him. So it ended up with both of them almost in the wall. So it was a real mess. Wöhrlein's pace was severely compromised through that early phase of the race as he took measures to get the temperature down on his battery again and rebuild his race, which he eventually did and came back through to finish. I think he got 12th in the end. The pace that he showed in qualifying in particular, and Lotterer was quick in practice, so we don't know where Lotterer might have been on the grid. I think he would have been in the top 10. Wöhrlein qualified fourth. He could have been in the mix with Evans for a podium at the least. I'm convinced of that. So when you combine this with issues they've had previously this season with Monaco, in particular when Wöhrlein was in the lead and looking as though he was going to take a reasonably conclusive victory, that's got to be hard to stomach. I spoke to Florian Modlinger the head of Porsche Factory Motorsport Formulary afterwards, and his demeanor doesn't change much. He's extremely professional, but he's extremely determined man. You can see that, but there was that sort of look in his eye of we have to get on top of this, and there's going to be a very brutal debrief after this, because it didn't show Porsche in their best light, and it was a bit of an embarrassment, the whole thing, which was a shame, because they had a quick car. And I think Wöhrlein is a driver this season, when you look back at it and you add those points up that he has lost, there is every possibility he could have made that gang of four a gang of five going into the last six races. But that's lost now, that's gone. In Vision, similar tale of woe. I kind of at a loss to explain just how bad it's gone for them. They appear all at sea right now. Robin Freins looks as though he just doesn't want to be there. He just wants to get out of the place. Cassidy just can't be happy with what he's achieved this season. Yes, he made a mistake in Marrakesh. So they've all got to kind of look at themselves and try and get over this slump, because that's what it is. I think it's, as I wrote last week, it's gone from mild concern to sort of almost a full-blown crisis there at the minute. It's just the just looking from the outside, the atmosphere in the team just looks horrible. And it's hard to get back from that when you are in the middle of a season. Thankfully, they're not in the throes of Gen 3 development directly, because they're with Jaguar next year, so at least they're able to go back from races and try and recalibrate. So let's hope they can. I think if they can, they've got the package and they've got the drivers to get some big results by the end of the season. But the feeling is that it just isn't going to happen. So really odd that, and it's got to be really galling for the team, because the constituent parts of that team, yes, there's been a lot of changes engineering wise, and perhaps that is part of the issue, but the constituent parts of that team have always been excellent, and they've always punched well above their weight. But at the moment, they're on the canvas, I'm afraid. I hope they're turning it around. We're just going to have to see what happens in New York.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hi, producer Johnny here, interrupting the show momentarily to tell you about Roan, a clothes brand we think you'd like. I don't know about you, but finding clothes you like can be tough. Sizes can vary from brand to brand, and fabrics can be poor quality or uncomfortable. We all know a good outfit can impact your confidence and help you feel your best, and that's where Roan comes in. Their range of stylish, functional, business casual menswear helps you look good without having to think about it. It's versatile, high quality and durable, and works in a range of social and professional settings. Roan's commuter collection includes products for every occasion, including the world's most comfortable pants, dress shirts, quarter zips, polos and blazers. It also features, and get this, wrinkle release technology and gold fusion anti-odor technology for more wears between washes, so you'll be fresh and clean all day long. Roan were kind enough to send me a shirt and some pants from the commuter collection, and I can tell they're going to be part of my wardrobe for a long time to come. The commuter collection could get you through any workday and straight into whatever comes next. Head to roan.com/race and use promo code race to save 20% off your entire order. That's 20% off your entire order when you head to rhone.com/race and use code race. It's time to find your corner office comfort.
Ian, the season 9 calendar has been announced just ahead of the Marrakesh race, the biggest one ever, but still with a few holes on there. You mentioned earlier that how much you like the race in New York, but we might not be going back.
Yeah, I think it's been reasonably well documented over the past few days about the challenges of the particular location they've got in New York at the moment. And again, I'll just reiterate the fact that it genuinely is one of my favorite races. I think it was one of the first ones I attended way back in, gosh, it must have been season four as a guest, and was blown away by the fact that you could go motor racing at all in New York, and with the backdrop that it's got there. So it's been fantastic. But this is one of the challenges that Formula E will always face going forwards, in terms of the fact that if you've got a USP that's racing in these city centres, city centres by their very nature continue to develop and evolve, and therefore you need that flexibility and adaptability. And as I mentioned earlier, I think that's something that Formula E does very well. The US is going to be an incredibly important market, not only for the OEMs that are involved in Formula E, but for a lot of partners who come in as well. And I know that Formula E, FEO themselves are looking at ensuring that there's some great racing there in the future as well. So I hope personally that we can maybe go back to New York again, whether it's in that particular location or another one in the future. But I'll certainly be enjoying the opportunity that we've got this season. And then let's wait and see, the fact that they continue to look at the calendar and further developments, in my mind, just brings more opportunity up. And there's some great other locations in the US. And then just take a look at the season 9 calendar that they've announced with new locations on there, such as Sao Paulo and Hyderabad. I think it's going to be phenomenal and great to see the other locations that we've come to know and love already, such as Monaco and Mexico and London, which always provides some great racing. So I'm super optimistic about it.
Sam, no South Africa on there. Any news on what's happening with that?
Well, there seems to be still some confidence in racing in Cape Town next February, but it wasn't on the provisional calendar, the draft calendar that went to the World Motorsport Council a few weeks ago. The executives that I've spoken to at Formula E are confident. They're telling us that it's just some loose ends and some details that need to be added to that fixture. I think there's an air, let's say, of being extra cautious after the Vancouver situation sort of spilled out earlier this year. Let's hope they're right. I think Cape Town, it would be a huge story for Formula E. But there's just something... I fear that, we were talking about Vancouver as if it was going to happen, 3 months ago, weren't we? And it was a nailed on one. People were more worried about Jakarta, and the irony being that Jakarta was this great event, and well attended and well received, whereas Vancouver didn't even happen. These things are notoriously difficult to put on, and I think Formula E are kind of having not a rethink as such, but they're just going to be a little tighter on how local promoters, working with local promoters and taking a bit more control of some of these new events, I feel. And that's the right thing to do. Ultimately, when there is a problem and there is a big PR fallout, which inevitably there was with the Vancouver situation, although it wasn't directly Formula E's fault, their name's at the, their name's on the front of the shop, isn't it? So it always comes back to them in some respects. So that the damage to the brand is there and real. And it's happened before, Brussels, was it Rio, I think?
Oh, I forgot all about Brussels. Wow.
there were many others. Obviously, Montreal went through a similar thing, although at least gone on, at least had one event. So I think the Cape Town one, it remains to be seen, but there is hope there. I mean, the feeling in Formula E is that it will happen. So let's hope that's right. The date set for March is hoped to be Sanya, the second Sanya race. Last went there in 2019. But quite honestly, I think everyone's looking at that and thinking it might just be a year too early to go back racing in China. I'd be surprised if we're not back in Marrakesh as another super sub race next March. And I think, you know, it could easily be an African doubleheader, couldn't it, with Cape Town. So let's see how that pans out. But yeah, the New York situation, as Ian said, we ran a story on it today with some detail about how that's looking and how Alberto Longo and his team at Formula E are negotiating with the mayor of New York to try and get a solution to some of this reclaimed land there, which is because of an expansion of the cruising industry, the cruiser industry in and around New York. So a difficult one that, but hopefully they can get to a reasonable solution and we can keep racing in the Big Apple.
Yeah, let's really hope so. I've enjoyed some good times there. Ian, we had the official announcement that the McLaren Neon partnership will be taking over that Mercedes entry for next season. Great news, obviously, to keeping the team on the grid. How hard has it been balancing that happening in the future while at the same time running the day-to-day operation?
It's kept us all pretty busy. it's fair to say. Now, you know, it stems back to when the decision was taken at the end of last season that Mercedes-Benz were going to focus their motorsport activities primarily on Formula One, although they have customer racing as well, still progressing, and you know, I just felt that over the past couple of years we built something quite special with the team and clearly it was performing well, and I didn't feel that we'd reached the end of that journey, so approached the board at that time and asked them if they would be supportive of us trying to find a solution for the future. And I think this is, you know, all credit to the board and to Mercedes-Benz, because they gave us that support. And I think that, you know, we often talk about sustainability, that's a very sustainable approach to take to not just let something sort of fizzle out, but to give it that shove towards hopefully a very bright future. And then from that point onwards, it was very much looking at bringing the right ingredients together. There isn't a woman or a man within this team that wants to be there as an also-ran. Everybody wants to continue to fight for podiums and race wins and ultimately championships as well. So we also needed to find you know, the right backing, the right partnerships and the right structure to ensure that we could continue in that vein in the future as well. And I'm delighted that not only have we got that now with McLaren and the heritage and the expertise that organization brings with it, but also with a partner that's been there really almost from the beginning in Neon, and then coming up to become title partner of the team as well. So that gives us a phenomenal foundation and a springboard, if you like, for the future, and it's exciting for the team. Obviously, that's, you know, all been going on in the background over the past months, and at the same time, as you say, we've had a good old fight on our hands defending the titles in the current season. So it's very much kept us busy, but the team have been brilliantly focused on the job at hand. You know, 95% of the team have solely been really working on season 8 and the racing that we've got to deliver. I think they're doing a very, very good job at that indeed, and putting us in a great position for this season. Proud to be continuing to represent Mercedes EQ until the end of that season. And then at the same time, very excited about the Neon McLaren partnership in the future.
Sam, there's quite a lot of detail in the announcement, but nothing on drivers. So maybe you can throw some names out there and we'll see how Ian reacts and judge if we got anything right.
Driver bingo.
I think before Sam starts, I'm glad this is a podcast and not on video, so you can't see my
the poker face doesn't come into it.
Exactly, thank goodness.
Yeah, well, the 2022 driver merry-go-round is still going. It's there are a few teams and drivers still clinging onto it and been thrown around. The two key ones, I think, that are of interest, let's say, a Nissan and McLaren. So it's really great to have Ian here with us to give us two world exclusives on who's going to be dressed up like two overripe papayas next season. Ian, over to you.
I'm just thinking what wonderful curveballs I can throw you, Sam.
Well, I think on Nissan, let's take Nissan first. Let's be diplomatic. We learned last weekend that Norman Nato and Sascha Fenestraz have entered the fray for a seat there, and we'll be running a piece on that this week. Lots of people are presuming that Max Gunter will definitely stay at that team, and while that would make a whole lot of sense for continuity in light of Sebastian Buemi leaving for Envision for next season, I'm not sure it's 100% confirm within the team. Let's wait and see on that one. Personally, I think Nato would be a good signing because I think he did a really good job in his rookie season. We talked a bit about that earlier, didn't we, about how tough it was last season, but even tougher this season. He's done a great job at Jaguar as well. You speak to anyone at Jaguar on the role that Norman has done there as a reserve and sim driver, it's a damn fine one. Fenestraz, highly rated. He's very young. I think he's still 21. He's helping his cause by winning in Super Formula at the moment, so would be a decent call. It would also be really nice to see a genuine rookie come in again to the championship, and a young one at that. So let's see. They don't appear to be in too much of a hurry at Nissan, which is a bit of a surprise to me. They've got a Gen 3 program as well. Yes, they've got Jan Maldenbrough, who's doing a great job as a tester and sim driver there, and Steph Sarrazin, who's still, believe it or not, he's still
knocking around there. He's
still donning the overalls and getting in the Gen 3 car to test, and he's actually taking more and more of a role there at Nissan as it sort of moves away from the EDAM side of things and morphs into something which they're positioning as genuine factory team. So that's very interesting. And then McLaren, you know, we've already run a story connecting René Rast with McLaren, which be great to see René back in the team. He's a driver highly rated universally, and I think his one full season with Formula E just didn't show the capability that he's got, primarily because of this chaotic qualifying system. So it'd be great to see him in a more hierarchical Formula E environment. And obviously, he's a very good development driver as well.
Yeah, we're big Rast fans on this podcast, Ian, just a little nod.
We are. And let's say his teammate could be another driver whose surname begins with R, couldn't it? I mean, there was this communication a few weeks ago about Felix Rosenqvist's future, which is confirmed at McLaren, but not specified on whether he's racing in IndyCar or Formula E. I think those are the two main areas of program that Felix will be involved in. I think from my point of view, from I think most fans' point of view, it'd be superb to have him back in Formula E because he was a real force back in season 3 and season 4 and with Mahindra, and arguably, had it not been for reliability issues in season 4, could have challenged Vern much more for the title that season. But we'll have to wait and see. The only man on this podcast who maybe knows is not either of us two, VDB, is it?
This is the brilliant thing about, you know, continuing to represent the Mercedes EQ Formula E team until the end of this current season and pleading my case in that respect. But just one point on that, and I think, Andrew, you mentioned it before. You know, I've not been in this game for a particularly long time, but I was astounded at just how silly season was or has been over the past few months. And speaking with a number of the players, you know, driver managers, team principals, and so on and so forth, I don't think anybody else really could quite believe how up in the air it's all been. So it's been a fascinating few months to observe, and yeah, quite amusing from time to time to see the speculation that's been coming out. So no doubt it's kept both of you very busy and intrigued as well.
Oh, it's our version of the football transfer market. It's brilliant.
It's if you could see in my office now, I've got a wall chart that would make Helen Mirren in Prime Suspect blush. It's like sort of flow charts, and it's got those little red arrows and all kinds of things going on there. So it's been intriguing. And actually, just a little bolt on to this conversation here to wrap things up. This week on the race, the-race.com, there's an absolutely fascinating interview with Alexander Sims, whose Formula E career will cease at the end of the season. He will be concentrating on endurance racing for 2023. But you know, I implore you to read that interview, because he opened up wonderfully. Actually, it was one of the best interviews I've done in Formula E, and Alexander really opens up as to why he's chosen that path and why he isn't taking up another offer with another team for next season. It's great reading. Yeah, one of the most honest and open interviews I've ever done. So, well worth a read.
Well, that's a great sales pitch and a really good way to end the show, Sam. That's all we have time for now. Thank you. But please remember to check out all of Sam's latest Formula E content on the-race.com as we build up to New York, of course. Ian, very best of luck for the rest of the season. And please check out the rest of our content, which includes the British Podcast Award nominated F1 show, and coming very soon, and I know a few of you are very excited about this, a new series of Bring Back V10s. Goodbye.
The Athletic.